I'm speaking today with the Harris County Sheriff Adrian Garcia, who is serving his first term as sheriff. Sheriff Garcia, let me ask you, when you first ran for this job in 2008, has it been what you thought it would be?
You know, it has been, Charles. I knew it was going to be exciting. I knew it was going to be challenging. I knew that there was a lot that I was going to learn. But overall, I knew that it was going to be exciting and an incredible place to provide service to the community of Harris County.
Give me kind of a high-level overview. Where was the Sheriff's Department 4 years ago at this time, and where are we now?
Well, 4 years ago, it was a department that was had a budget that was out of control. There was incredible distrust and tension with the community. There was a lot of issues in terms of how certain things were done. The jail population was busting at the seams. We were shipping inmates out to Louisiana. I mean, and the list goes on. So today, I'm happy to report that many of those things are a thing of the past. One of the things that I try hard every day is to protect the public's trust. I try to make myself available to the community. In fact, I just left this morning an event where we were recognizing a hardworking, professional and dedicated deputy for his good work. And so we've been working hard. I've been working hard to make sure that the community knows that they do have some professionals and dedicated employees within the Harris County Sheriff's Office, and that they should be honored and held up. Every day I work hard to let them know that our deputies are working hard to fight crime and keep the community safe, take on the gangs and the cartels and anybody else, any other thug that wants to try to bring harm to the community, to the law-abiding community. But in particular, we've been focusing on making sure that we are good stewards of the people's money. We had a budget that was out of control. In 2 years prior to my administration, the department spent about $71 million in overtime. In the first 2 years of my administration, we brought that down to $54 million in spite of a hiring freeze. And so every day we're working hard to be good stewards of the people's money, but at the same time, effectively using those resources to fight crime, gangs, and thugs out in the community and make Harris County the place to live and build a business and raise a family.
What kind of policies and procedures did you change from your predecessor?
Well, one of the first things I did is I brought in business-minded individuals, people who have helped me implement business-like approaches. Here's a simple one. The commissary fund that there's millions of dollars that flow in and out of through the commissary, through what inmates have deposited into their accounts and things of that nature, never had been audited. Never had been audited. I implemented the first audit to make sure that we are bringing accountability and transparency to the community. But the policies are, we have looked at the operations. We have, made some changes. For example, the law requires us to give inmates at least 2 days to be able to visit their loved ones. Well, we're the largest jail in the state of Texas, but historically we had been providing the community 7 days visit. And that's all fine and well, but when you are having to watch how you're spending your money and looking for ways to save, we adjusted that down from 7 to 4 days a week. Some people have wanted us to go down to the required 2 days, but we're a big operation, and so we also want to be cognizant of the fact that we have many people in our custody that are in pretrial that haven't, whose situation hasn't been determined one way or the other. So we want to be cognizant of that, and we think that 4 days a week has been helpful, but it saved us at least about $2 million. So those are some of the things that we've done to help us. We have provided the community a public view of the crime that's occurring out in the community. For years, the media has had, Channel 13 has had Crime Tracker, and but the Sheriff's Office did not provide that that perspective or that opportunity to view what was occurring out in the community. Today we do. Of course, it creates a challenge for me because people look at it and say, hey, there's a dot near my house. What are you doing about it? But that's a challenge that I take on, and that's what we spend our days trying to accomplish is to make sure that all neighborhoods are as safe as possible.
Let's talk a little bit about the jail, because that's both, I'd say, your biggest cost center as well as part of the biggest responsibility. As you said, up until very recently, Harris County has had to send inmates out to Louisiana and to other counties because there were too many inmates here for us to handle with the number of guards that were available and the number of beds that were available. What has the sheriff's office done to reduce that number to the point where we can handle all of our inmates?
Well, principally, what we have done is to, number one, we have made, we worked hard initially to make any relationships we had with any facilities where any of our inmates were housed at. We worked to make sure that we were in a competitive market. And so we worked hard to make sure that we were getting the proper bang for the buck for what we were spending, which was an enormous amount of money. The second thing is that we look to create an opportunity that low-level offenders, first-time offenders, people who aren't really the kind of folks that we ought to be afraid of, that if they wanted to work hard, if they wanted to obey all the rules, if they wanted to spend part of their time in our facility, you know, getting a leg up than from where they started, if they wanted to complete their GED, if they wanted to learn a vocation, if they wanted to go out and clean up bayous and clean up parks, if they wanted to paint over graffiti, we were going to make all of those opportunities available to them so that they could earn an extra day's credit for time served. And so we implemented the what we call the Earned Early Release Program. And this is where individuals get the opportunity to earn an extra day's credit for time served, so long as that, number one, they are a low-level offender, they are a nonviolent offender, they don't pose a risk to the community, but it also that they wanted to give the community back some of the cost, some of the value that the community invests in them. They give back to the community. And so they, since 2010, this program has brought us a net reduction of about, or rather we have released about 3,500 inmates through the course of this program since it's been implemented.
Okay. Now, as you know, District Attorney Pat Lykos recently got involved in a bit of a spat with various law enforcement unions over a policy that she has implemented where they will not prosecute as felonies, you know, trace amounts of crack and other, you know, low-level drug cases. The legislature has given law enforcement agencies the power to, rather than arrest those individuals, but to give them a citation so that police officer doesn't have to go off the streets, they don't have to take him to jail. What's the Sheriff's Department policy on this?
Our policy is to arrest people out there that are violating the law, that are bringing harm to the community. And I won't get into, you know, the district attorney's thought on her policy, but the bottom line is our guys are out there in the neighborhoods and they are seeing situations. They are dealing with circumstances. They're encountering gang members. And so we're doing everything we can, given the laws and the policies that we have in place to keep the community safe. So we're going to arrest, you know, as the saying goes, we'll catch them, we'll gut them. It's up to the DA to figure out how to fry them.
Okay. So, but do your officers have the discretion, if they choose, to give someone a citation rather than arrest them and bring them in for that kind of offense?
No, the DA has set the policy. So we have to comply with the DA's policy.
Okay. All right. The other issue related to the jail was there had been some inspections in previous years where the federal government was threatening legal action because the conditions were poor, the health of the inmates were poor, too many inmates were dying in custody. The trend on that has been positive. What steps has the Sheriff's Department taken to deal with those problems?
Well, on deaths in custody, the first policy that we put in place was that we value human life, is the attitude that I work to communicate, and that anytime anyone in our custody whether, you know, it can be pretty obvious that pre-existing, you know, health or medical conditions may have been the determinant on that cause of death. I don't care what it is. Today, versus it being handled, at the administrative level of the jail operations, today we have internal affairs respond to every in-custody death. We make sure that homicide responds to every in-custody death to the extent that we can, given the resources that we have. But we make sure to put a value on human life within our detention operations and throughout. But the other thing, too, is that we have spent an inordinate amount of time making sure that our medical policies and procedures are as contemporary as they could be. I've spent and have learned a lot about how our medical screening occurs and things of that nature. It's hard to say that there's one thing that we have done that has brought us from a average of 17 in-custody deaths per year before I got to the sheriff's office to the three that we had last year in 2011. Three is still too many, and we're going to continue to look for opportunities where we can one day hopefully celebrate that we have zero. But obviously that all has to do with a lot of factors that are sometimes beyond our control. We do get people who are not necessarily healthy. We do get people who have not necessarily lived healthy lifestyles. But all that being said is that we want to make sure that we're holding up our constitutional obligation to take care of folks while they're in our custody.
Well, you also have to deal with issues of substance abuse and mental illness. Now, Judge Evett talks about the Harris County Jail being the largest mental health facility in the country. What steps have you taken to, deal with that population in a way that's, more conducive to their needs?
Well, the first thing that I did is that when I became sheriff, I convened a task force of providers and experts and stakeholders on the issue of mental health. I created the Mental Health Task Force for the Harris County Sheriff's Office. And I asked George Parnum, the attorney who represented Andrea Yates and who's done an incredible job to help to bring this issue to a better and different light. But through that process, we finally got the sheriff's office to a level that is as contemporary as the Houston Police Department. We now have the Crisis Intervention Response Team, where we've had three deputies thus far who are now responding to crisis situations or mental health crisis situations out in the unincorporated areas of the county where we principally patrol in a similar manner to the way the Houston Police Department has been responding to this issue. And also, let me just say that, Charles, remember that part of the program that the Houston Police Department is implementing is by virtue of the work that I did when I was on Houston City Council. I didn't like the fact that we were asking trained law enforcement officers to try to be mental health experts. But rather, I thought the process ought to be where we are identifying circumstances of chronic calls to the police department where we know someone exists that has a mental health crisis. Why wait till the next call? Why have that patrolman knowing that he's going right back to that same call he just left an hour ago or maybe, the shift before? But why don't we become proactive by partnering our local law enforcement officers with mental health professionals so that they can begin to intervene at the most earliest stages before any level of criminality has occurred and divert those individuals into the proper resources that are the best place for them to be served. Our crisis intervention response team is now just over 2 months old. And in 2 months, Charles, in 2 months, we have already diverted 49 people away from being members of the Harris County Jail environment. That's an incredible savings to the taxpayer, but it's also the right thing to do for those whose illnesses is their principal crime.
Okay. Now, the county, a couple of years ago, put a couple of bonds up for vote, one of which would have been to build a new jail facility. That was voted down. They've been kind of talking about what to do from there. You know, our new facility, I mean, what is needed from a facilities perspective? I mean, at this point, I would hope we don't need just to build more bed space because we're trying not to do that. What is needed now?
Well, first of all, let me just say that we do not need another jail. And the bond that was proposed, I'm not sure how the previous administration was pitching it, but as I've come to understand it, I would support it if we ever get to that point, is the fact that we need a facility, a contemporary facility, because we're so that that we call rather the front door and the exit door to the sheriff's office jail environment. It may look like a jail, it may be attached to the jail, but at the end of the day, it is what we call our processing center. It's where individuals who have been brought into custody can be processed effectively, efficiently, and that we can contain those members who don't need to become long-term residents of the county jail, but probably will be out in within a matter of hours. And so why do we then go through the entire process like we are today, for the most part, of processing them as like a person who is an extremely violent and dangerous person? We're processing them identically. And so the processing center would allow us to be able to stage those people that we know won't be here for a long period of time. But because of the antiquated facilities that we have today, we're having to process them all the way through, get them a costly jail bed, utilize a lot of resources to get them all the way into our facilities so that we can free up the front door of the jail system so that we can make room for incoming inmates. If we had the proper facility, we could stage that so that those individuals would sit there, get processed, make bond, and get out of there, and wouldn't necessarily have to consume a jail cell or be put in general population with other individuals that are that would be longer term residents of the county jail. So, number one, it's not a jail that I would be proposing for, but rather it is a processing center that would allow for strategic types of space and amenities. Space for example, mental health inmates that have to be stabilized. Space for the emerging female population that we are struggling to have more space for. Special needs individuals. And so that's what I would propose for, and I think it would be a much needed facility given how we're growing as a community and given how old our existing facilities are. That being said, Charles, I've been able to push back the immediate need on that because if you recall, when the Criminal Justice Center was built now about maybe 15 years ago, the basement of that had never been used for its intended purposes. The taxpayers spent millions of dollars to create a processing center at the basement of the Criminal Justice Center, and it was never used. It flooded twice. The taxpayers paid for it to be repaired twice, and it was used for a parking lot and for storage. Today, we put it online, and we use it as, and we call it the Central Work Center, so that officers can quickly come in, do the paperwork, do the processing, fingerprint their inmates, get all their things in order, and then walk across the street and deposit their inmate and not have to consume that space and be in a very tight environment. So I've been able to push back on the actual need because we've created some capacity just by being creative and making good use of what the taxpayers had already paid for.
Okay. You've been operating, as you've said, under a hiring freeze. How has this affected operations and Did you not recently make another trip to Commissioner's Court to ask to be unfrozen?
I have, and I will continue to do so, because you got to remember, Charles, that throughout my organization, I have an attrition rate of about 20 people a month that I lose throughout the operations of the Harris County Sheriff's Office. That includes patrol deputies, that includes investigators, that includes bailiffs in the courts, that includes civilian clerks, that includes nurses, that includes call takers, and it includes detention officers in our operations. Through the course of the hiring freeze, I've lost about 500 employees, some of which I've been able to replace through one hiring authority here, one hiring authority there, and I am making another one. And I am trying to make the and demonstrating the effectiveness of that. When you hire people and pay them $20 an hour, you can stop paying $40 an hour in overtime, which is where the organization was at when I came into office. And so we are demonstrating that when you allow us to hire and hire to stay above attrition levels, that we can bring overtime down and save the people money. And but you know, it takes that process of going to Commissioner's Court and asking to hire those folks.
Okay. The Sheriff's Office has used the 287G program with the Immigrations Department for some years now as a means of screening inmates who may be here in violation of their immigration status. This has been kind of controversial, as a lot of folks who don't care for the use of it. Tell me why we use 287G, and you know why, what good it does us.
Well, first of all, look, Charles, you know, you break the law, you lose the right to your liberty by committing a criminal offense, and you come to the county jail, we're going to learn everything about you that we need to learn as a law enforcement agency. And I think that's fair game. You put yourself in harm's way, you put yourself out there, and you violate a law, then I'm going to fingerprint you, I'm going to run you through every single database that I've got, and I'm going to determine whether or not you're a criminal, whether you're wanted, whether you got a previous criminal history, or whether you have a questionable immigration status. And then we'll let ICE do their job about determining and allowing you to go through that particular process to resolve it one way or the other. We're a pointer system for ICE. But at the end of the day, I think that it is a process that is important to do, given the fact that our job is to keep the community safe.
I guess one of the criticisms that people have of it is that, you know, not as you yourself said, not everyone who comes in is a violent offender, and not everyone who comes in is ultimately going to have been judged guilty of a crime. And yet, turning them over to the Customs Service, they may, or you know, Immigration and Customs, some of those folks may wind up being deported for not really having done anything wrong.
Well, I don't want to be flip, but I'll be very candid and very straightforward. Don't violate the law if you don't want to have this headache. You know, but by the same token, I think that my voice serving on the safe on the Secure Communities Task Force has been a place where I have carried this concern of the community to the highest levels of our federal government. I've shared it with Secretary Napolitano. I've shared it with Attorney General Holder. I've shared it with the highest highest members of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Department of the Homeland Security Department. And I think we have been able to, the community by virtue has been able to gain some ground, because now there's a greater level of prosecutorial discretion that ICE implements. I have nothing to do with it. And remember that I do not make the ultimate determination on a person's immigration status. I don't make the ultimate determination whether someone should be deported or not. All that is done by ICE. But I think the concerns of those community members that I've heard very well have seen a shift in attitude and policy approach by ICE.
Okay. When you ran for this office, you were an incumbent member of City Council. As we sit here today, the two of your former colleagues who are in their third term are also seeking other office. Any advice for them as someone who once ran for office while in City Council?
Work hard. And don't forget your primary job.
You stayed on the job when you ran. One of your former colleagues has talked about how he'll plan to resign. Do you think it's better to stay on the job or to resign as a council member running for other office?
Well, I won't get into how what their thought process is going to be, but I worked hard. It was one of the longest years of my life because I didn't miss any council meetings that I can recall for the sake of a political event. And I worked hard to continue to serve my constituents during the process. I was responsive during Hurricane Ike and Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, but principally Hurricane Ike because that happened during 2008. So I focused on my job at hand, and I believe that anytime you do that and you continue to be responsive to the needs and concerns of the community generally decides who they want to keep in office, irrespective of the office that you may be having or seeking.
And as you run for re-election this year, you have a couple of primary opponents. Why should Democratic voters vote to make you once again the nominee for sheriff this year?
Well, Charles, as I've said, I came into office with a budget that was out of control. I came into office with a department that had incredible distrust in the community, and there was a lot of tension. There was a lot of questions about the operations of the county jail system. I've worked hard over these last 3 years in my first term in office to address those issues. We have made incredible progress, as I've laid out to you. But we have much more progress to achieve, and I want to continue to serve the citizens of Harris County and continue to ask for their permission to keep me as their sheriff because I am focusing on what I believe is important to them, fighting crime, keeping the community safe, but also making sure that we're a good steward of the people's money.
Sheriff Adrian Garcia, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
Thank you.